Three times a week, Eric and I are here to try to help you understand the issues at hand, which are virtually not understandable. They're that complicated. They're very difficult. I don't mean to say that Eric doesn't understand a lot of it, but remember, we're on the outside looking in, trying to connect dots that we are not given, that we have to assume are there. We look at them from different directions and kind of figure things out. And I think most of the information we've given you has been very, very worthy. The CDC very quickly, and this is really ludicrous, announced that the institutes have done an external self-study, sure thing, and proposed a makeover to, quote, restore the public trust in the CDC. Dr. Rochelle Walensky said that she plans to remake the culture at the CDC to help the agency move faster when it responds to a public health crisis. She also wants to make it easier for other parts of the government to work with the CDC. Oh, what an altruistic soul she is. And wants to simplify and streamline the website to get rid of overlapping and contradictory public health guidance. Gosh, is that an admission? Sort of an admission? I don't think so. Nah. Now, the day after that, little Rochelle came out and said about monkeypox, something very funny, and I'll tell you about that in just a minute. Welcome back, partner. You there?
I'm here, Jeff. Good to be back. It's Friday.
Yeah,
I think.
We get tired. We do get tired by Friday.
It's a battle.
Eric is on this every day. So am I, but not in the same capacity she is. I mean, she's pulling things apart, putting things together, looking under rocks, and God, it's not a pretty sight. It just isn't. So rest assured, everyone, the CDC has taken an honest look at itself and is going to give itself a new coat of paint. Now, CIA Director Rochelle Walensky said, "This is funny. We don't have all the data that we need on monkeypox. It's similar to what we had with COVID." Game players, unbelievable. They just never stop. So now it's a lack of data on monkeypox, which has been around forever in Africa. And we know the UN has been involved, the World Health Organization has been involved. They've all been looking into this. They know. So I rewrote the headline slightly. CDC Director Walensky said, "Gosh, we don't have all the data that we need on monkeypox. We're still fabricating it." So there you go. They do. That's what she talked about when she said contradictory information. Well, how could that be on the CDC website? Because they make a lot of it up. It's crap. That's the truth. So there we go. Anything you want to add?
I'm in full agreement. It's theater.
It's the other word you used, which is wonderful. It's theater designed to anesthetize the masses of sheeple. It's not hard to do.
And I think different people, different subsets of the population require different types of anesthetics.
Right. We're going to get into some things here that you'll find very interesting. I don't know when it was. We've been doing these programs for over a year and a half now. And a long time ago, the subject of CRISPR came up, and Erica right away was right on it. And the woman who allegedly discovered how to make it work is named Jennifer Doudna. How about that? Her last three initials are DNA. Doudna. Jennifer Doudna. We're going to play a little video of her in a couple minutes. So tell us about what is CRISPR and why should we really be concerned? Those of us who care and those of us who are listening, and we're all listening all around the world to this program, why should we care about CRISPR and what might happen with its misuse, shall we say?
Well, CRISPR is bona bona fide gene editing where they actually, they use a guide RNA, a virus to carry a guide RNA into a cell or multiple cells to actually either edit, delete, add genetic material. So it will change the actual DNA, which is different than what's happening with the mRNA injections, where all that's doing, all that it's supposed to do, is cause your cell to produce a foreign protein. And the change was never supposed to be permanent. It's not supposed to be permanent, but we're realizing now that it is. It's this mRNA is being reverse transcribed and possibly being integrated into the DNA in some cases.
Sure.
But CRISPR is the deliberate, intentional editing, either adding, deleting of a person's DNA. And, you know, it's been available since probably the 1990s, and they've been playing with it ever since, but there have been restrictions on using it on people because we don't know fully what are the long-term effects going to be. It does have sometimes unintended, quote, off-target effects. And so for ethical reasons, when we used to have ethics, this was just unacceptable. So it was limited to extreme situations. It has been used, I think, in a couple of isolated cases to treat rare diseases when there's no other options. But now, with these genetically damaging injections that two-thirds of the world has now taken, this is going to be offered as a solution to the genetic damage, to go in and repair the genes that are now presumably inserted into people's DNA that are producing spike protein.
In other words, the other way we should look at this shot, it's a biological weapon of death, which is actually performing, I'm sure, probably close to 100% of their expectations, their testing. They've constructed this bioweapon, and they've turned it loose. And two-thirds of the world, is that what you said?
Oh, I'm just guessing they've given now 12 billion injections.
Yeah.
Not all of them are mRNA or vector viral carriers. I mean, some of them are just straight-up protein subunits and inactivated virus, but many people who have received a COVID shot have this genetic material in them now that may or may not have been integrated into their own DNA.
As in forever?
Yeah.
Or are we supposed to think that CRISPR can magically go in there and with tweezers pull it back out?
That, I believe, is going to be offered in some cases. Now, bear in mind, do you remember back in January, there were a couple of HIV clinical trials that were announced, one of which, mm-hmm. one was Moderna. They were trialing a vaccine for HIV. And there was another company called Excision Bio something or other, and they were offering CRISPR solution to HIV. And they currently have 9 HIV-positive patients enrolled in this study, where they've received an injection of a CRISPR-based technology to go in there and seek out the offending gene and hopefully find every copy of it and delete it, and the person will no longer have HIV. Now, they're going to track these people for 48 months, which is, 4 years?
4 years.
4 years. 9 people for 4 years, and I guess...
Do we know if any of the 9 people have been shot up with the bioweapon?
No, I don't know.
Wouldn't that
That's
taint
a good question.
The test?
I could, but I suppose.
I don't know. Okay, we have 2 videos of Jenny Doudna, D-O-U. DNA, Jennifer Doudna.
And there's one with Bill Gates, too, right? That's the more bothersome one, I would say.
I don't remember which one that is. Is that the longer one? I sent you two.
No. This one's only about 3 minutes.
All right. This is the 5-minute one. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Because I didn't send you a 3-minute. This has to be.
It was embedded in one of the articles. If you scroll down, and Bill Gates is just salivating and rubbing his hands together over the prospect of rolling out CRISPR for the general population.
Okay, I'm looking and seeing. I think this is the one. Okay, this is 5 minutes of Jenny Doudna at the World Economic Forum talking about CRISPR technology. Here we go.
So I'd like to thank you all for coming today. I'm going to tell you about a technology that is revolutionizing biology and offers the potential to cure human genetic disease. So this story really starts with DNA. You probably know that DNA is the code of life that gives cells the ability to function, gives organisms the ability to develop. But when there are mutations in that code, it can also give rise to disease. And we know a lot about the sequences of DNA in cells right now, but we know about mutations. But up until now, it hasn't been possible to do much about those mutations.
But wait, Jenny. Doesn't the Pfizer and Moderna bioweapon injection mess with your DNA? You could call it mutations. It's artificially doing things to your DNA. Is it not?
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to point that out. Okay, here we go.
Imagine that we had a tool whereby we could actually fix individual mutations in DNA, much like you would do with a word processor to cut and paste and edit text. What if we had a text editor for DNA in cells? And it turns out that now we do, and this is a technology that came about through not a focused project, but actually through a curiosity-driven set of research experiments that were done to understand how bacteria fight off a viral infection. So this was an international...
But wait, Erica. Did she say a virus? Viral
yeah.
infection?
Mm-hmm.
She's behind the curve, isn't she? There are no such things as viruses.
That's right.
And therefore, there are no such things as viral infections. Okay, let's go, Jenny.
Collaboration between my lab at the University of California at Berkeley and the lab of Emmanuel Charpentier, who at the time was doing this research in Sweden at Umeå University. That's the team. And we worked together to figure out how bacteria employ an enzyme, a protein, called Cas9, that turns out to be a programmable protein. This is a protein that in nature is programmed by two separate molecules of RNA, one of which provides sequence information that allows this protein to recognize pieces of DNA that have a sequence matching the sequence of the RNA. And from that understanding, we were able to engineer this as a two-component system, a single protein and a single RNA that provides scientists with the ability to program this enzyme as a molecular scalpel to cut double-stranded DNA at sites that are directed by this piece of RNA. And once that happens, cells have ways of repairing double-stranded breaks by introducing small changes in the genome or sometimes whole new pieces of DNA that introduce new genetic information at the site of the break. So this is a precision tool that now allows us to take this protein RNA complex and introduce it into cells or tissues to correct mutations at sites where we know there's a deleterious change in the genetic code. So I wanted to show you an example of how this can be utilized.
Hold on a second. A protein RNA complex. Now, I will be willing to bet that 99% of our wonderful listeners haven't a clue. I don't. A protein RNA complex. See, they just toss these things off. They're in very important terms, but for the non-scientific professional, it's difficult. Just want to make that point. What is she talking about, briefly? A protein RNA complex.
Otherwise
you want
known
to
as
address?
PNA, a peptide nucleic acid. Well, it's a protein amino acid sequence with a nucleic acid sequence with it. And you don't even need to know that. All you need to know is they're going in there and they're making cuts in your DNA to be replaced or just deleted out or have something replace it.
And we trust them to do exactly what they say, right?
She's making it sound, and I'm sure she's quite good at this. This is her field of expertise, that this is a precise science. We've got it all figured out. No. The thing is, when you go in and you start editing genes one at a time, genes tend to function in clusters. Making a change to one gene is going to have invariably effects on other genes that we don't know. I mean, we don't have that knowledge base to figure out, if you affect the gene for eye color, what else is affected by
right.
that as well. They never work in a vacuum. It's not as linear as, some people would like to think.
No, it's 4D.
So you're going to have off-target effects or just unintended or unknown
right.
effects from this.
It can get crazy.
I mean, they haven't
fast.
Even mastered this mRNA thing. I mean, they told you it would stay at the injection site. They told you it would break down. They told you it wouldn't integrate into your DNA.
But they knew it wouldn't. They just told
probably.
Us.
Probably. They probably
they
had
lied.
A pretty good idea.
They've been lying from the beginning. And if just listen to that interview with Dr. Robert Malone, where he says, yes, we've been gaming this for over 20 years, multiple countries. So, yes, lying becomes easy when you're on the other side of the tracks. Here's Jenny Doudna again.
A protein complex can actually be injected directly into fertilized eggs of a mouse. And in the experiment you'll see, we're targeting a gene that is responsible for the black coat color in mice. And so normally these mice have beautiful glossy black coats, and once we make this targeted change, we then implant these edited eggs back into a female mouse, and when she gives birth to pups, you'll see that the pups are now mostly white. And the remarkable thing about this experiment is that when these mice grow up, you can test them and show that every cell in the body has this single genetic change that gives rise to the white coat color, but otherwise they're absolutely normal. So they are normal mice, no mutations elsewhere in the genome. This is a type of experiment that used to take at least a year to create a mouse like this, and now it can be done in a few weeks and by people that don't have to have special expertise. So this is a technology has over the, it's been very exciting over the last 2.5 years to see this technology taking off. These are publications in the scientific literature. It's been sort of exponential growth of publications, people using this technology for all sorts of applications. And so some of these include making changes in targeted genetic changes in plants, in fungi, in animals that are important agriculturally, in animals that are important to us as pets. And also in thinking about human health, also to do things like make changes in stem cells, which are cells that can give rise to new organs. Also to make changes in animals that are important as models of human disease, such as mice and monkeys. And we think within the not too distant future, it will be possible to actually use this technology to make changes in humans so that we can actually cure diseases that have genetic causes, like cystic fibrosis and other such disorders. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jenny. I don't trust a thing she says. she's leaving out at least 50% of the potential of this thing. Remember, everything always goes where first? To the military-industrial big board. And they evaluate it, and they think, how can we use this for defense? That's what they call it, when it's really offense.
Yeah, it's all of this can be dual use, and they're only telling you the good that could come of it, and I'm not even sure it's good.
No, and I don't want green eyes. So, that leaves me out.
Now, don't forget, there was that Chinese scientist, what was his name, He Jung-kyu, a couple years ago, who broke some laws in China and decided to CRISPR edit some embryos. And what he was trying to do was to make a mutation in one of the co-receptors for the HIV virus, so that these babies would grow up and they would be immune to infection by HIV. And he succeeded. There were two twins, Nana and Lulu, that were born, and he was proud of it. He actually, you know, was a viable embryo, and it brought it to term. And what they discovered was that the gene that he was trying to modify or edit was not present in all of the cells. What usually does happen is you get a mosaic effect where the gene is present in some but not all the cells. But he was, that landed him a jail sentence because he broke some laws, and he just got out of jail on April 22nd of this year.
He's lucky he didn't become an organ donor. That often happens there.
I think we'd be kidding ourselves if we thought that Nana and Lulu were the only CRISPR-edited babies to be born at this point.
You sent
he
me
just
a
got
picture.
Caught.
Of course he did. They've been doing things behind black closed doors for decades, things that
of
I think
course.
Most people would be stunned, shocked by.
Yeah.
Things that are there. We have been mixing humankind and what we call animals for a long time genetically. This is not new. They're way down the road. I'm sure there are probably pigs running around with human heads and human brains, etc. Same thing that was going on in Atlantis right before it was finally done in by whatever great power was involved. Here's the other video, and I did miss it. It was right below the one I sent you. So this is the one with little Billy Gates. You want to play some of that?
Yeah. It's only about 2 minutes.
Okay. Here is Sir William.
Walter Isaacson's new book, The Codebreaker, tells an amazing story. It's about how Jennifer Doudna and other scientists discovered a new way to edit DNA. Editing DNA with precision has been a holy grail for scientists for decades. The DNA, of course, encodes all of the biological functions. And so some of the mistakes in DNA cause disease, genetic disease. If we could go in and fix those mistakes, we could save many, many lives and get rid of these diseases. CRISPR is a very fascinating tool. You figure out a part of the DNA sequence that you want to change. Then you take the DNA that's nearby and create a guide in RNA, so that helps you locate the position. And then you link this Cas enzyme, which has the ability to do that cut and edit. And so pulling together this guiding RNA and this Cas enzyme, editing becomes possible. Our foundation is funding work to see if we can use CRISPR to knock down mosquito populations dramatically. We're also looking at CRISPR to make better seeds. We're also looking at ways that CRISPR might help us with very accurate diagnostics. And we're considering how the CRISPR gene editing might lead to a way of curing HIV and things like sickle cell. Using CRISPR to help cure disease is not very controversial. But using CRISPR, you could actually change the DNA that would determine your baby's eye color or skin tone. Most scientists agree that this is something that we should not do. Walter's book does a great job talking about how it's a slippery slope and raising the question of where should we draw the line and the relative role of the scientific community and governments in helping make sure that we don't cross it. There's no question CRISPR is going to save a lot of lives. It's going to raise issues, and so I hope you enjoy the book.
Well, Billy, once again, he left out 90% of what he should have been talking about. These things are picked off by the military-industrial complex and examined every possible which way to see if they can be useful in defense. War, or as they say in the South, wall. This is not a joke. He made it sound real nice. Oh, we can cure sickle cell anemia. We can do all these things. No. The potential is grotesque. And I don't believe there are ever truly red lines drawn by science in its totality. Wherever there's money, wherever there are dictatorships, there are scientists who are willing, either for money or under the threat of death, etc., to do anything. And I think all this is going on all the time. Now, I'm not a scientist like Erica, but I've been looking at this whole scene for many, many years. And I would be willing to bet that there are no red lines.
No, I agree. But now, you know, it's being rolled out for, you know, general use. It's going to be a Pandora's box. What the pharmaceutical company did with synthetic drugs, you know, better living through chemistry. In many cases, most cases maybe, it created more disease than it ever solved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is, you're going to see some real horrors when this stuff goes, you know, mainstream. But they've got their customer base.
I went into Rite Aid to get my eye color changed to green, and I came out with a third leg. What am I going to do? It grew within a month. This is all. We're doing things we shouldn't do. We're doing things that there really is no need to do. Look what they have done to us with the bioweapon. Pfizer, Moderna, etc. Look what they have done to 3/4 of the world's population.
Yeah. But how many people that are injured right now from this injection, and really just their quality of life is miserable? If they were offered CRISPR, if someone told them we can go in there and remove that spike-producing gene, why wouldn't they say yes?
Well, see, Jenny still believes in viruses. I'm sorry. It's a disqualifier right at the beginning. So,
right.
Anyhow, all right.
It's all fantasy.
Yes. I'm going to play a video. I won't identify it beyond that. I'm just going to play it because there has been a major effort to upset science as well as the common man and woman understand it. They're telling people now there are no viruses. This goes against over 100 years of science and papers and data and results. And
Nobel Prizes.
Yeah. I mean, I used to get strep throat, okay? That's a bad infection. And I'd go in and they'd tell me I had, you know, you streptococcus or whatever. Or I'd get a viral issue. And now there's no more viruses. That's what they're trying to tell people. What they're doing is dismantling science as it used to be taught in schools. This is all intentional. It's a psyop. Let's take science down. All right? So they're confusing the holy hell out of people with this stuff. Now, here's anything to add? Go ahead.
Yeah, to me, it looks like a organized campaign to
science.
Just add to the information chaos.
Stir the soup
for some
of
reason,
chaos.
They they don't want people understanding what's been done to them, what's being done to them right now.
Absolutely. All right, here's a video. Let's see what this... This comes from the Weston Price Organization. It's not, I don't think it's too long. Here we go.
Thanks, everybody. As I've spoken about before, one of the sacred roles of the physician is to identify new syndromes and diseases. And a few years ago, I inaugurated a syndrome called Syndrome of Insufficient Thinking, which is now an official part of the medical diagnostic armamentarium. And the symptoms, of course, are insufficient thinking, and the acronym is SIT, S-I-T. So, for instance, people who believe that the government has their well-being at heart, or they're they're interested in their well-being, that is a clear major category of being what we call full of SIT. Now, another one that I actually have identified in the last just few days and weeks is a new disease, which I'm sure is a virus, because there's three people in the garden who I work with who've all come down with a similar rash. You can see it right there. And the main factor that we've been around, even though we have been around poison ivy and lots of bugs, is a dangerous and vicious predator named Pumpkin. You can see him right here.
Okay, a picture now of his cat drinking milk. So Pumpkin is the culprit. So right away, you see the turnaround. There are no viruses. This is an antivirus video. Simple.
In his, all his viciousness. And it's because of intimate contact with Pumpkin that we believe that we caught this viral infection. Now, the CDC has given guidelines for how to manage intimate connections. They first say to avoid all intimate connections with anybody you don't know. And second of all, they say you should, instead of having intimate connections, have virtual connections, over the computer. And if that isn't possible, that the connection, the intimate connections, should be fully closed. Now, I personally don't think the CDC goes far enough, because I think all intimate connections should be done with hazmat suits. That's really the only safe way. And that gives new meaning to the term hot sex. So thank you very much, and I hope this becomes part of the medical lexicon.
Okay. Hilarious comedy, all right? But the message in that little 2 minute and 21 second video was, there are no viruses. So this guy is stirring the chaos again to confuse people. No viruses. It's not unlike Flat Earth. I'm not knocking Flat Earth people. They believe it, and I can get the idea of how they think about it. But to renounce viruses? Jennifer Doudna didn't. She believes in viruses. In fact, a lot of people do. This is just another effort to keep people confused. When they take a country down, they don't just go about it financially or politically. Believe me, they go about it from every angle and every direction. And that's what they're doing with medical terminology. There's a war being fought. It has to do with syntax, it has to do with semantics, and most people just don't. I mean, if you read social media and look at the way people write now, there are no commas and periods and colons, and capitalization doesn't even count anymore. Sentences are broken, they're run on forever. And these are people who care, and they're trying to find that information. But the collapse of our education system has been going on for about 100 years, and it is now in its final terminal stage. But this issue of there are no viruses, I've seen a number of people, as has Erica, who start out very competent, predicating all their messages and warnings and advice to us on hard science, which has been around for a century. Viruses and bacteria exist. And then they change. All of a sudden they change. Why? What happens to them? We don't know. Tell us briefly what happened to Mike Yeadon, former director of science at Pfizer for, I think, over 25 years. Mike Yeadon. What did he do recently?
Oh, he's now questioning whether or not the SARS-CoV-2 virus exists.
That's what I would call an abrupt about-face. Would you agree?
Yeah. There's, 169,000 papers on PubMed at this point? Peer-reviewed published paper? What are all these people doing? Not studying the virus. I mean, we can find the proteins that we know are comprise the virus in people's tissues, organs, tissues, whatever. It's we don't understand all of what the virus does. I mean, there's new things coming out every day. It just how bad it really is. It's not a flu. It's absolutely not a flu. You don't get these types of coagulopathies and protein misfolding issues with a flu.
What has been particularly of interest to us, and I'm sure to some of you at least, are these what we call media doctors, media scientists, whatever. They'll start off on one foot, and then they'll do, like Mike Yeadon, a 180. Now, he's questioning the existence of viruses. I know about Pasteur and Beauchamp. I understand that. We presented both sides here on the program. I had Lorraine Day on recently. She spent an hour demolishing the idea of viruses. That's her privilege and her right. So we present that. But there are others out there who seemingly come out of nowhere. Now, remember the guy who said, if you turn on your kitchen sink, you're going to get king cobra snake venom, and you better not drink it or you're going to die. That's what the bioweapon injections are really all about. It's just king cobra snake venom in the municipal water supply. No problem, right? Just get a water filter and you'll be okay. But he scared the hell out of people with that. And Beef Stew was right with him, pushing it all the way. They made it into a mini documentary and they had a trailer for it and all that. So you've got to be careful. Now, that particular guy, Brian Artis, he may be a wonderful guy. I don't know him personally. But all of a sudden, Brian Artis is talking about snake venom in your tap. And then Brian Artis has appearing on his website a store. Or as they say in New England, stoa. Is that right?
He has a stoa.
And he has dozens of products, which are invariably almost all simply relabeled, private labeled, from companies that sell various and sundry supplements. You want a supplement? You want curcumin? You go to company X and say, I want curcumin. Here's my label design. I want this label on the bottle. I'll buy them with 150 caps per bottle, whatever. And then he puts them up. So he's got a real slick stoa. All of a sudden shows up on his site with I don't know how many different supplements. And the name of the business is Artis Labs, which suggests what to you? It suggests that his people, his hired scientists, somewhere in a big clinical building, are putting these supplements together just for Artis Labs. He didn't tell you that he private labeled them from some wholesaler house and got somebody to do label design. Now, there's another one who has begun to renounce viruses, and that's Lee Merritt. Viruses apparently don't exist to Lee all of a sudden, who also, if you go to her site, and I believe it's themedicalrebel.com, and look where it says either stoa or shop, prepare to be stunned. This woman came out of nowhere, and now she has, I think I counted over 100 different supplements in her stoa. And you can go page after page after page. Some are private labeled. I believe they all have different labels. But how did this doctor, come up with an enormous inventory. It's a warehouse full of supplements. How did that happen? I can tell you right now that the web page alone for that cost a pretty penny. So who are these people beholden to? Are they beholden to science and the truth and the reality and the world and the manifestations of DNA and microbial life and pathogens? What are they doing? And you've got to watch very carefully, because we're being tricked by a lot of people. And one of the big indicators is if somebody says, nah, they don't believe in viruses, they don't exist. And you look on their site and they've got this enormous store. And what are they doing on that store? They're selling supplements, dozens and dozens and maybe hundreds. To whom? To the scared and the desperate. What are they doing by doing that? They are profiting on fear porn. They are profiting on people who are desperate. Now, I'm not saying don't take supplements. I'm a big supplement fan, always have been. But when these people all of a sudden do a reversal and say, no viruses, and you start looking at them and their operation, and you see these enormous catalogs of supplements, where did that come from? Who put that together? Having designed many websites, I can tell you, it doesn't just happen overnight. And I've just mentioned two. There are many others, I'm sure. But to renounce viruses should be an immediate red light warning signal to all who care. All right? They are trying to tear down science as we understand it. It's not going to happen here. We believe in science. And that's pretty much all I have to say. But basically, artists and Merritt are obviously pushing an agenda that has a lot of money behind it all of a sudden. Where did that come from? Who are they answering to? What are their real connections? I don't know. Maybe they're wonderful people and go to church every Sunday. I don't know. But I will say this. It looks pretty damn suspicious to me. Money rules. And if somebody comes to you with a lot of money for the use of your name and your reputation, most people will take the money.
Yeah, well said. You know, their message would have more clout, I think, if we were living in a time that didn't involve this research that's been going on for a couple decades now and into these gain-of-function exercises to weaponize viruses or microbes. And unleash them on people. That's what we're dealing with here. You know, this is synthetic biology that's been released on us. And to tell people they've got nothing to worry about is a true disservice. You know, and
it's a betrayal on every possible level.
And it's really disappointing to see some of these people that came out strong in the beginning, and now they've sold out.
Well, I used to watch Merritt. We both did. We watched artists. We've watched everyone on all sides of the tracks. And it's very saddening to see where some of these people have gone. And
yeah.
I think I should probably leave it there. So, but money rules. Just remember that. I said it before. I say it again. Everybody's got a price.
I will say, too, that anyone that's trying to tell you there's no such thing as contagion, there's quite a few people who have
the war on shedding.
They can refute that very well.
The war on shedding is another one that is being pushed and promulgated by some of these people. And I think if you've listened to our program for any length of time and read with us as we read for you the really heartbreaking stories from some of these people, you know damn good and well
yeah.
that shedding is 100% real and deadly for some unvaxxed. The only way you can transit life now intelligently and reasonably safely, I hate to say it, is to stay away from your opposite vaxxed counterpart. The unvaxxed need to stay away from the vaxxed. The vaxxed need to stay away from the unvaxxed. You've got to be smart about this, or you're going to lose, and you're going to lose big.
Yeah, that group is growing. I am, 17,000 people roughly right now, probably acquired 1,000 in the last week. Wow. So there's a lot of people suffering ill effects from being around the vaxxed, and it doesn't seem to get better. The only remedy seems to be, after a certain point, once you've crossed that threshold, is to stay away. You've got to minimize the exposure after a certain point. It seems to be cumulative once you've been sensitized to whatever is being shed, and it probably is the spike protein, but there's probably other things in there too, like these microRNAs that can disrupt your native RNAs, the RNA right. that your cells are trying to produce to regulate your metabolism and your physiology. These microRNAs can disrupt that.
We are under deadly attack. Okay? Got it? Remember I told you a long time ago the plug was going to be pulled on the United States and Western Europe and Canada, New Zealand, Australia? So what's happening? They're all going fascist communist right now. I know those words are seemingly not usable together, but believe me, they do fit.
I would be leery of anybody that is casualizing this right now. They're
right.
Bad advice.
You want to read one or two quickies from our human file?
Sure.
Which one would you like to go with?
Intimacy
with the vax.
Intimacy
with the vax. That's a good one. all right, here, let me do this one real quick. I personally believe that sexual intercourse with someone injected would be like a loaded gun. My own expression, without saying too much, I had a small reaction that dissipated in 2 weeks after doing that. I feel my immune system took a hit by inflammation. Blood panels were okay. Still back in December 21. That's all I'll say on that. As far as Nova crap, I was in the company of a friend who had the shot, and I found it hard to breathe. The smell was awful as well. I got by my spidey senses now. If it smells, stay away. All right, grab another one.
Let's see. Protection from shedding. Okay. Someone asked this person, what do you do to protect yourself?
Yeah.
Last year, I was taking bromelain 3 times daily, NAC once every 2 days, vitamin D daily, and zinc every 2 days. I drank pine needle tea once a week. I wasn't sick much. The kids and I didn't even catch COVID when my partner had it. He had it mild for 2 days, or when my sister's family caught it. The kids would have bromelain added to their water bottles each morning. This year, I cut back on those supplements significantly. The maintenance was tiresome, and I had hoped the shedding had waned or that our bodies had learned to fight the spike proteins from others. I now eat duck liver fortnightly, and I am currently drinking pine needle tea daily, mostly because I enjoy the taste. I started drinking rainwater at the beginning of this year and sterilize it with a few drops of CDS per half liter or 5 liters. Not enough to do anything significant, and it evaporates off. I've been sick a lot this year. I have started taking 1 bromelain daily again. Probably not enough.
Quercetin and bromelain are available together. But this is another testimonial to people reaching in the dark, trying to put things together that they've heard will help them. And that's one of the most difficult things to deal with when you read all these. There's as many different formulas as you can imagine. It's just people are trying to protect themselves from shedding. And it's first and foremost, it's a physiological distancing. You have to stay away. And then pick the supplements that you want to bet on and take them religiously. I don't know about duck liver, but that's a new one on me. You heard of eating duck liver?
Yes. It's not on,
well, you
on
have,
my
have
menu.
You?
yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, I don't have anything else to add. I hope this was hopeful and helpful to all of you. And hopeful is the operative word there, because we don't want to ever give up hope completely. But there's a will, there's a way, and people are apparently at least holding their own after they've been severely spiked by the vaxxed. So let's hope that those stories continue to aggregate. Final word?
Oh, no, that's it. Long week.
Yeah. Go have some ice cream. Have something fun.
A midnight snack.
And a cookie. All right. Don't forget the cookie. Thank you, okay, my friend, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, Jeff. Have a good evening, everyone.
Thank you for being here, and it's a treacherous world out there. It just is. And we're trying to make it a little bit more understandable. So hopefully it's working, and hopefully you can put some of this information to good use. Take good care of yourselves. You still have a little teeny window to prepare, so make that effort this weekend. Talk to you soon.